Any questions from last session? Do we have any questions while you're eating? No? You can't chew and talk at the same time? What are you eating? Okay. How many of you ever, when you were in school, you ever get a rubber band, put it on your finger, stretch it, and shoot somebody with a rubber band? Anybody do that? All right, there's a... Okay, here's what happens. You get the rubber band, you stretch it, you cause tension in the rubber, and if you don't cause enough tension, it doesn't go far enough and it won't hit the... It gets no power, okay? It just drops. If you pull too much, it'll snap eventually, okay? A rubber band will only stretch so far. And so the secret to shooting someone with a rubber band is the proper amount of tension. And I want to talk for this session about admin tension points in ministry. There are things that cause tension. Now, and I want you to get this thought in mind. The things I'm going to talk about here are not problems that will ever be solved, but they're tensions that have to be managed. And sometimes in life, some things will never be solved. We just have to live with it. And it's a tension and a pressure and a stress that will just have to be managed. Other things can be solved. Okay, if the elevator's broken, we need to solve that. We need to get it fixed. We don't need to manage that and learn to live with it. Now, I rarely take the elevator. I always take the stairs. Only reason I took the elevator today is because I was in a conversation with Gans, and it wasn't over, and Gans takes the elevator. He doesn't take the stairs. And so, but I almost never, unless I'm carrying heavy boxes to my office, but, so I got on the elevator, and but if the elevator's broken, you understand, that's a problem that needs to be fixed. If there's someone who's always late to work in your department, that's not a tension you manage. That's a problem you solve. Okay? When the internet's not working, that's not a tension we manage. We solve that problem. But what I'm going to talk about now, there's no solution to these things. You have to live with them and manage the tension. If there's too much tension, eventually it snaps. If there's not enough tension, we don't get any forward motion. So tension is good. Pressure is good. Okay, a train, a steam engine, it runs on the idea of pressure. It's the pressure that's produced that propels it forward. So pressure is not always a bad thing, okay? And here's some of the tension points that probably will never be solved, but we have to learn to manage them. The first one is ministry and family. And that's not just unique to working here at Every Nation or Victory. No matter where you work, there would be tension. I get so tired of people saying that, you know, ministry puts pressure on the family. I do not believe that. Ministry does not put pressure on the family. Success puts pressure on the family. If you're working in the corporate world and you're successful, there will be pressure on your family. If you're working in a ministry like ours that is growing in a crazy pattern, this is not normal growth. I don't know, what are we now, Gigi? What's the growth of Victory? Right now, 20% annually, 15% annually. So it's what church experts say, if you have a 10% decade growth, if you grow 10% per decade, that's considered a healthy church. We're growing 15% a year, which means you triple almost, I mean, you double almost in 3 years. So that's... in the corporate concept, that success, and success brings pressure. So I don't want you thinking there's pressure on your family because of ministry, because of church, because of working for a mission organization. That's not why. Because some people resent the ministry because they think that's the problem. But you go find someone with a climbing career out in the outside world, and there's equal and maybe more pressure because they're not concerned about your kids or your marriage. And we actually are. Okay, you got that? There's always going to be that tension between ministry and family, and it's something that's never going away, and it's compounded by the rapid growth. Okay, next one. There's always going to be tension between local and international. Let me go back to family and ministry. There are seasons of time when, here's how it works. Like we were in Indonesia for APEC. Deborah and I, over the years, she knows that when we go there, we're hardly going to have a conversation. Because here we have 300 leaders from 20-some nations, and all of them need, or not all of them, but many people need my time and many people need her time. So when we get up in the morning, both of us usually have breakfast appointments with a Chinese pastor, and she's with the wife of somebody from, you know, from Thailand or somewhere. And then we go straight from that to a meeting. And then in the meeting breaks, somebody needs to talk to her, somebody needs to talk to me, and then lunch is set, and one day lunch, I'm with all of our Chinese pastors. The next day lunch, I'm with the Asia regional team working through some problems in a church in Australia. And then at dinner, that's arranged for this couple that's having some struggles with their kids, and so we're doing that. And so when the day's over, we collapse in bed and get up the next morning and pray and read our Bibles, and then we go our separate ways. And so we know that for these 5 days, we're in the same hotel room. We're hardly going to say more than hello and pass each other going. We understand that. She knows we're not going to Indonesia for vacation. When things get back to normal, then we'll have our normal conversations and our normal life. But there are times when conference hits, things like that. Okay, look, okay, we're about to go into one of those whirlwinds. We just accept it. Otherwise, that's how we manage that tension. We go in with our eyes open, but if we live like that all the time, that's a problem. Everybody understand? And so sometimes we'll do things when we're scheduling Africa next year. We'll have one of those, we have a African leadership conference. Right after that is our Every Nation Africa Worship Writers Workshop. That will be 6 days of intensive where we'll be in the same hotel and we'll hardly see each other. But we're also scheduling 4 days after that, once everybody leaves, and we're not telling anybody we're staying except for Roger and Nicola, our pastors in Joburg. Don't tell anybody. Everybody else will think we got on the plane and left, but we're going to a safari. We're going out in the bush, and we're going to be face-to-face with Simba and hopefully not Mufasa and Dumbo and all the animals, okay? So, but that's part of how we manage the tension of ministry and family. Knowing this next season, there will be no family time. This is all ministry. But we will pack in, okay, we're going to have, once that's over, we're going to pretend like those people don't exist and they think we got on a plane. We're not lying to them. We're just not telling them we didn't get on that plane. We're going out there and nobody's going to see us. And that's not how you manage it because you don't travel like I do. But there are ways that you have to figure out how to manage that. Everybody got it? Okay, local and international. Here's another tension. Acts 1:8, you'll receive power when the Holy Spirit comes on you. You'll be witnesses in Jerusalem, Judea, all Samaria, and the ends of the earth. Local and international. We're given the power of the Holy Spirit so we can reach Jerusalem, Judea, Samaria, and the ends of the earth. So we can reach Metro Manila, the provinces, Asia, and the world. That's the call. There will always be tension you will feel. If you're in the communications department, I don't know how much of that tension filters down to you or if it all stops with Carlos, but I know he feels it every day. We've got demands for local church projects and we have demands for Every Nation's quarterly mission video that's going to be shown all over the world. There's local and international tension. There's tension between if we do this video, and boy, it would sure help us if it... Here's the conversation we have. If it's got Tagalog in it, it would help us, but the shelf life is limited to just the Philippines. If we do it in all English, it's being shown in London and Mumbai and Sydney and Auckland and Cape Town and Johannesburg and Lagos, Nigeria. Not to mention New York and Los Angeles and Hawaii and Nashville. And so when the communications department's doing a missions video, going, okay, there's a tension between local and global. Do we just do two? Do we do one that's English / Tagalog and then do the same thing that's all English? Do we duplicate the work or do we do one that's useful globally? Now, it may not be useful in Thailand, but in many of our larger churches around the world. And so that tension's there. Sometimes we do it, like at the discipleship convergence last year. We decided if this doesn't help anybody outside of the Philippines, we don't care. It's going to be local. We decided local. And so most of the testimonies were Tagalog. There was a little bit of English splashed in, and it was an amazing event. And all of those videos were jaw-dropping, hair-raising, tear-producing. It was amazing what the video team and the writers, and it was amazing what they did. But then when the World Conference came, and then we've got to do something that's global. That was amazing as well. But some of it is, how do we do something that's useful for both, and something has to give on one side or the other. So you understand the tension. It's not just about language. That's just one example. But there's constant, and when you start looking locally, I have a meeting later with Pastor Ferdy, and he does amazing with this, of leading a local congregation, but then anytime there's a need for one of his leaders somewhere else, he thinks big. And so, okay, you need my worship leader? I'm not sure what we're going to do without him, but okay. For the better, the good of the big picture, okay, we'll figure out how to make it work locally. Other times the decision is, no, that's going to hurt us too much locally. We've got to figure out, but there's always a tension there. I don't know how much that filters into where you sit, but somewhere in the organization, the local international tension is happening. It happens every time there's a budget issue. June and Michael want to spend more money reaching the world, and many times the local pastors want to spend more money in their own location. And it's a good tension. It really is. It causes some pretty intense discussions when it comes to budget, when it comes to staffing, but it's good intensity. It really is. And grown men can get real intense and real sometimes angry, but because we're a relational culture, the moment that's over, everybody's friends again. And that's the kind of atmosphere we want, and I'm proud that we built that. So June and Ferdy can go at it pretty strong about missions, and sometimes Jonathan, you know, is fighting for things for 10 days, and the local church is going, we're doing so much out there, we're not doing enough right here. And that tension's very, very real, okay? Again, you may be oblivious to it, or you may be right in the middle of it, but that's always going to be there. And you know what? Here's the good news or the bad news. We'll never solve it. It will always be there. I hope if we solve it and we become just local, then we stop being who God's called us to be, or if we become just a mission organization and we don't build local churches, if we ever solve it, we're in trouble. So God forbid that we solve that tension. It's not a problem to solve. It's a tension we have to live with and manage. Next one, stewardship and generosity. Stewardship and generosity. How many agree both of those are good things? Being a good steward, meaning let's get the best deal. That's great. How many believe generosity is great? It's a tension. I was meeting with a leader of one of our churches, and recently, in the last 5 years, one of our churches in the region, it's not in the Philippines, it's outside, the pastor resigned and moved on to a different kind of career. The church had been stagnant for quite a while. And I was talking to the new pastor who's taken over, visionary, and the previous pastor did some things quite well and did some other things not so well. But it was a small church, but the amount of money that was left in the savings account was staggering. This small church that had been stagnant for so many years, it was mind-boggling the amount of money that had been stuck in the church savings account. But in all those years that all that money was saved, they did no church planting. They did no campus ministry. They didn't do any outreaches anywhere in any other city or any other nation. They basically had a weekly worship service and amazing Bible teaching, great teaching, and the church was dying. but they were saving money. And so the new pastor who's now leading going, wow, what great stewardship. But you know what was missing? There was no generosity and there was no vision. That money was not fulfilling its purpose. People were giving and giving and giving, and that pastor, because he overdid the stewardship side of, I don't even think that's good stewardship, so there's got to be a better, he was so conservative, the building was falling apart, but he wouldn't spend money to paint it. And there were open doors for missions and ministry and church planting, and he wouldn't spend any money to do that. And the church desperately needed staffing upgrades, and he wouldn't spend it on that. It was just save and save and save. Fortunately, now there's a pastor that's managing that, that's very visionary, and it's really going to be put to good use. But again, I think if we fall to one side or the other, we're missing it. And if you're very conservative like that guy, you might get upset that so much money is being spent on a church plant or on a, I don't know, on missions trips or on whatever else. But the purpose of money is to do what people gave it for. So on one hand, we want to be good stewards. We want to get good deals. We want to be, stretch every peso as far as we can stretch it. But on the other hand, we've got to keep doing mission and keep doing ministry. And we're not accountable to a board of directors that are looking for a profit. We're accountable to God who's looking for fruit. And so there's a tension there. There's always a tension there. One of the best I have ever worked with is Kevin York, because he is radically generous, but there's a stingy side to Kevin. Actually, we had to rebuke him. Norman Nakanishi, our pastor in Hawaii, because every time Kevin flies to Hawaii to do consulting with our church in Hawaii, he stays in the worst part of the city because he gets the cheapest hotels. He stays in parts of the city that Norman won't even go to because he's scared to go there. And he's so embarrassed. He says, Kevin, why would our executive director... So Norman always, anytime you go, he books a hotel with a view of the ocean. Now, he never lets you go to the ocean because he books you doing ministry from the time you wake up to the time you go to bed. But at least when you go back to the room, you're looking at the waves and the... And it's really more torture. Where Norman puts me, it's you look out, you take great pictures, and then he's calling, oh, we've got another meeting, and then you leave. But where Kevin stays, you look out of your window, and it's another building. And so we finally banned Kevin from staying in those places. But Kevin's so conservative with the money, he won't spend it on things like that. But when it comes to when the African Children's Choir needed money, Kevin gave tens of thousands of dollars. But again, there's that tension between, was that good stewardship? I think it was good stewardship of our name. I think it was good stewardship of our reputation. So when it came around to building this building, then we had a good name among contractors, and people wanted to work with us because they knew that we were fair and that we paid on time. And even when that guy demanded more, we paid anyway. We did what we felt at the time before God was right. And one day we'll give an account to God for that $500,000 pesos. And I think when we have fired employees, let me talk about this with stewardship and generosity. There have been times when we've released employees, and I mentioned, but we always try to fire, and this is Kevin York's words, we always try to fire righteously, meaning that we always try to be as generous as we can when we release people. There are laws that we, as far as we can go, but we try to do as much as we can within the legal framework. We don't try to do the minimum, we try to do the maximum. And that's always our goal. And so there's been a few times over the years, and we've had, because of moral issues or whatever, we've had to release pastors, and we have always been overboard with generosity and trying to be, that's not when we kick in and go, we need to be good stewards of the money. That's when, because we're relational and we care about families and we care about people, and we want to give as much of a financial, blessing going away as we possibly can. And so that's always been our, and with salaries, we try to pay as much as we can within legal and ethical boundaries. Our goal is not to pay you guys as little as we can possibly pay you, and then guilt you into working. A lot of ministries do that. They say, this is for the Lord. You should do it unto the Lord. And then they don't pay. And then that's not the approach we take. We want to pay as much as we can pay within ethical and legal bounds. We don't want to try to pay as little as we can possibly pay because we think you're worth it. So that's our goal. That's and different departments have different funding mechanisms here. And so within the constraints of that, our goal, we want to see everybody successful. We want to see everybody financially successful, and we want to see everybody do as well as they possibly can. But we also, there's the tension between how much of that money is going to missions and going to real life and going to the court. There's a constant tension there. So, all right, stewardship and generosity. And you have that in your own personal finances as well. There's a tension every time. And some people manage it well, some people don't. Some people live in guilt with their money all the time, that they feel like they should be doing more of this or more of that, but that tension's there. Next one, professional and relational. We talked about that a little bit already. Let me say this. One of the ways we manage this between professional and relational, a lot of the people I work with are really my best friends, lifelong friends. And so if it's relational, I would look and go, of course Manny needs a raise. Of course Joey needs a raise. Sure, that's how relational would do. But I have to be professional also. And so I'm not the one who decides their salaries. We have a formula that HR and that Gigi and outsiders have helped us come up with a formula. And within that formula, here's the maximum for this position. Here's the minimum. So we only have leeway to give performance raises and bonuses based on this small part here. We can't pay more than that. We can't pay less than that. And we didn't decide those parameters. That we had outsiders. The same in Nashville. There's a company we hire that comes in and decides that and decides our executive salaries. And then we have a framework that you can. And it's easier in the States because you can just buy it. You can go and say, my church is this size. We're in this city. Give us the framework for a youth pastor, for a worship pastor, and then they've done surveys of all the churches in the area, and you just buy it, and they give you, and then you have it's more complicated here, because that data doesn't exist. Gigi's worked hard to create that data by going to the professional world, to the nonprofit, and we sort of merge them between, here's what Citibank pays for this position, here's what a nonprofit pays for this position. Usually the nonprofits, in our opinion, are underpaid. Many times the professionals, so we're trying to find a balance in between where's the corporate world, where's the nonprofit world, where's the in-between, where's the sane middle ground, and there's some formulas, so it's not just a relational thing. And we look and go, okay, well, and sometimes it's a matter of a relationship that you have, but you don't have it with the other. It's not that you don't like the other one. There's just not a relationship because your kids aren't on the same football team. And then you end up being biased toward the one where the relationship. If we're going to be relational and professional, sometimes that professional has to trump it. For instance, again, all right, next one, strategic and spiritual. David Sumrall is a pastor of COP. David's an amazing Bible teacher. David used to live in my building over here, and we would run into each other in the elevator and chat sometimes. I think he lives in Makati now. But when I first came to the Philippines in 1984, David was gracious enough to sit down with me and a few of our young leaders. And David had at the time one of the largest churches in the city. I've lost touch with him when he moved out of my building. But David said something about 28 years ago that I've never forgotten. At the time, his church was huge compared to most of the others in the city, except for JIL was probably bigger. But David said this, revival will get people in your church, but it will take administration to keep people in your church. And a lot of churches have constant revival, but is that up there? Oh, wow, you guys are amazing. And a lot of times you see revival, but churches never grow because they don't have the organizational structure to maintain the growth that the spiritual life brings. And so that was one reason that started us on the journey of trying to do structure and administration and systems to the highest possible level as a church, because I watched so many times revival bringing people, but the lack of structure and the lack of, and so there's that strategic and spiritual. The spiritual brings the people, but if you don't have the strategic and the structural, then you lose it. And then the last one is public ministry and private devotion. And all of us will have that tension between your job here, what you do. And sometimes because what we do for a living is spiritual anyway, we're being paid to be a part of a mission organization and a church, we can sometimes get confused and confuse that with our own personal devotional life. And there'll be tension there. Some of you, what you're doing is very spiritual anyway. You're doing research and you're doing videos or you're organizing prayer meetings or worship or different things like that. But don't get confused and think that's your own devotional life. Every one of us need our own walk with God, and then we need what we do together to advance God's kingdom. And keep that private devotion, especially those of people who are in pastoring, because you studied to preach. But if you don't study for yourself to grow your own spiritual life, then it's a problem. And if we think that our walk with God is about the job we do, then you know, we walk with God all throughout the day, but if we don't have that private devotional life, then something's missing. And there's always going to be a tension there, especially working in church work like we do. We can deceive ourselves into thinking we have our own individual walk with God. In reality, we're just being carried by everyone else around us. But we have to have that private devotional life, not just working in a spiritual organization. All right, let's take a minute and maybe let's take 5 minutes and talk with maybe two or three people on your table, something you learned or anything that you got out of that for the next 5 minutes, okay? Something you learned, something you disagreed with, something that made you mad. One more minute. Looks fun. Okay, 30 seconds. All right, time. The back table men, give us one quick summary back there. One of you guys, who's the spokesman for the back table?
In our case here, actually, in my example here is more of a stewardship and generosity. Let's say for the church work, for a time, because we're renting seats for our foyer area, and we decided to purchase the seats instead of just renting it out, because the rent cost is 25 pesos per seat, per usage. Per,
where?
25 pesos per seat per usage on a Sunday. So we decided to buy them on the block, which costs only around 220 pesos. So that means 10 usage will be able to already get back the money for that. And the reason why we decided to do that is that aside from saving up, let's say in the long run, if we don't need those seats anymore, we can still give it to other churches who we may think that maybe put these seats of better use for us. So in a way, we're not just saving, but we're also helping other churches in doing so.
Where are you?
Ortigas.
Ortigas, yeah. How many chairs?
That's around 100 chairs that we bought.
Yeah, good. Okay, over here. Who's your spokesperson?
What we learn is more on stewardship and generosity, because we're from the South Hub, and we're just talking about the. Can I change? actually, when we talked about it. For me, it's more of a question, like, how can we relay it to the other admin, like, because they're not in the staff dev, because this really a tension, like, every admin tension points here is, we really experience it. So, more of a question, like, how can we share it to them, and, like, if the pastors know this also, I'm sure they know, because... So I'm just really concerned more of that. That's why we're just discussing.
During the break, I'll call Pastor Ariel now.
No.
Ariel,
yep.
Bell
so.
Has some things that he wants to, you need to know. Okay.
Well, I really appreciate the admin tension points, because most of us from the local ministry, we're really juggling a lot of balls in our hands. And most of the time, it's like we really wanted to strike a balance in every area of our life, and it's so good to know that, you know, these are things that cannot really be controlled but should be managed, you know, with regards to family and ministry, local and international, something like that. But we are grateful because we are grateful that the church is really trying to strike a balance in our life, and we know what which is really important. And for in this case, there's always the grace of God. In case there's a ball that fell, you know, we can always repent and we can always go back to, you know, the right thing. If we fail, you know, to juggle the ball in our hands.
Yeah, good. All right. Over here. Miko. Don't distract Jack. He's over there. He's growing a beard while you sit there. He's working, concentrating.
I'm always shaving my.
Oh.
Well, I learned about Jack and his joy, but as for me, my attention is about it's always about dealing with other outside or third party suppliers. For example, we're asking for these documents, but they cannot provide it because they're just somehow under market, or maybe what they call black market business. But we're not dealing with that because we're having a standard. Like we're in finance, and sometimes we just need to talk to them or explain to them more, parang more relational, or how to tell them or to explain to them that it is okay, or we're following a standard that is need to be done, because most of the company naman in the Philippines are following that, then we just need to explain that to them.
Yeah. Good. And I think it's important, Miko, and for all of us. How many of you deal with outside vendors? That's part of what you do in your job. Raise your hand. Okay, most of you? Who does not deal with outside vendors? Okay, so yeah, some of you, probably those of you who are representing us and you're dealing with outside vendors, like what kind of, who deals with outside vendors? Like who? What kind of vendor?
Basically more on materials related to electrical.
Okay.
Yeah. For conferences, like stage design.
Okay, all right. So more, all right, who else? Outside vendors, what do you deal with?
From the facility, so I usually deal with suppliers, contractors. Okay. Sometimes when
for
I-
For product?
For the building permits also.
Okay, all right. Who else? Bell, what? Travel agency. Okay, there's a wide variety already right there. And here's the tough part, okay? If you're the one, how many of you are the one who actually does the negotiation? All right, you're negotiating. Okay, again, that's a difficult thing, because my goal is always, when it's over, I want to be able to invite that person to church. And if I have done it before where I've negotiated on things and I've not wanted them to know that I'm a pastor because of the way I did it wasn't good. Have you ever done that? Have you ever done it and realized, boy, I just got us a good deal and I misrepresented Jesus? Has anybody ever done that besides me? And sometimes Joe would do that. not that Joe, the Joe I was talking about earlier. I'm sure that Joe does it plenty of times. But how many of you have ever done that? When you were finished, you went, oh, gosh. All right. Our goal is we want to get a great deal. We want to negotiate and all that. But we also want to be able, we are representing Jesus. We're representing a church. We're representing a mission organization that we want to be able to share the gospel with someone when it's over. And that's a difficult, it's not impossible, but it's tough. And I don't want to, and this is where with the one I told you when we wrote that check to that unsaved contractor who said we owed him money and we didn't, I didn't want that guy for the next 10 years to go around going, I'll never do work for a church again because they ripped me off. We're now where we can continue to share the gospel and pray for this guy. And we've had disagreements with Architect Mignosa. We've had plenty of disagreements. But we've done it in a way that there's still a relationship, and he still asks for prayer sometimes, and we can still have God conversations with him. And even though sometimes he and Joe would be yelling at each other, it was over things that needed to be discussed, but yet we kept. So I think that's where, when you're dealing with outside vendors, always remember, when I finish, I want to get a great deal, but I also want to be able to share the gospel and invite somebody to my victory group. I want to be able to do that. I don't want to burn the bridge. And sometimes that's not within your power, because sometimes you're dealing with somebody who's just can't be dealt with, but That's the goal. And we'll all fail that sometimes, but that's what we're shooting at. And if you failed it, then you're just like me and Joey and June and the rest of us who have done that, but we're trying to make sure. I did that when I was coaching my kids baseball. There were times when they were in little sports and in tennis and all where I would get so mad at the umpire, and there were some times when I reacted in a way that I'm going, oh gosh, I hope they don't go to victory, and I hope they don't find out I'm a pastor. There were other times when I could talk it out, and then I could still talk to them and invite them to church. And I've been hit and miss on that, honestly. Sometimes I do a good job, sometimes I don't do a good job. But hopefully we get better and better. So, okay, one last, okay, on the back table there. Any last comment, and we'll wrap up on this? Looks like you're elected, Mayette. Joyce has seniority, so you have to do what she says. She has the book.
Okay.
She's been here 100 years from now.
Actually, for the ministry and family, the three of us here agree that we are very grateful in the ministry, because me personally, I don't have a hard time taking leaves. That's it.
You don't have a what? Say that again. So every time Joey's out of town, you can take a leave. He doesn't even know.
Permission.
Okay. All right. Good. Okay. That's it.